Hello and welcome to another episode of Control Alt Access. You know the deal, at this point we talk about video game accessibility, in theory a couple of times a month. I'm one of your hosts, Laura, and I'm here as ever with my lovely co-host, Arevia. How are you doing today?
Hello, oh, I am full of food and happy. It's the Constitution Day of Norway today, and it's like, just imagine if every single person in your country put on their finest clothes and ate a lot of food and then had like marching in the streets with like all school children. So there's been a lot of things today and I have eaten so much food. I'm so happy. So
I'm glad. It's nice to hear from someone who lives in a country where when you have like a very nationalist day of celebration, that's a very good thing.
Yes.
And not a reason for like, oh no, I'm going to hide inside my house away from all this.
Yes. Because like I laughed because somebody asked like what you can imagine. It's like, yeah, it's like if every single national day of other countries was not about the military. It's about children having fun and doing games and eating ice cream.
I'm so glad it was fun. I went into London yesterday very briefly and I saw a larger than usual number of English flags and instantly was like,
I've
got to take my headphones off. I've got to be able to hear what's going on. I've got to stay my distance. So I'm glad you've had a good celebrate day.
Yes, yes. No, this is luckily a day for everyone. And it's been like a big, as it is every year, and more people are buying our traditional costume, that's called a bunad. And more and more people from other countries but live in Norway, and like this is their new home, is now starting to buy bunad and feel like they can wear it. And I'm so happy because, yes, and we have like non-binary people that doesn't want to have, because there is male bunad and then there's female bunad, but then the non-binary people are starting to make like a mash between them both, and I'm so glad. And this is, should be for everyone, so I'm happy. So
that's lovely. I don't know how long of a control not access we're doing today, because this is the week in which the Accessibility Summer Showcase has to go from like a bunch of trailers and theoretical stuff to actually being a thing. So I've got a week of... I'm making some cool accessibility stuff, but I'm a very sleepy person today.
Yes.
But we've played some stuff that has some accessibility things. Which of us wants to start off today?
I could start with a game that I have been looking forward to a long time because it's such a small indie game that I really, really want to shout it out. 2 seconds. I just need to close the door. My husband is cleaning up, and I'm glad he's doing that, but I can see the microphone tick. So I have played a game that I really, really want to talk about because it is a small indie game. And the game is called Little Nemo and the Guardian of Slumberland. This is an old-time fairy tale that has had fairy tales made of it and many movies made of it. And I also think it has been a game before, but there is now a new edition of it.
The name seemed really familiar, and I'm looking at the art of it now, and I'm like, I've definitely seen this somewhere.
Yes. And now a new person have made and like made a game of it, and I absolutely loved it. It
looks so wholesome and cute.
Yes, I have talked about it for years and years and years ago because I played a demo for Wholesome Games Direct when that was out. And it is a cute little like old school platformer. And it is
you're a little kid in your little bunny pajamas.
So every time you go to sleep, you are sent back to dreamland where you can do whatever you want, but you don't have any memories, so you're trying to build up your memories of what have happened to the place at the same time what have happened to your memory. And it's like these old school like Hollow Knight kind of like platformer games.
Yeah.
And I wanted to shout it out because it did something really, really cool that I wish more platformers did. So in the same way of Hollow Knight and Silksong, what it does is that you can go wherever you want. Some places are you cannot go due to you don't have the specific level up you need. But you can often go into levels where you are not high enough level to actually be able to combat the enemies here. Because what happens when you fight an enemy... So you have traditional difficulty settings of like balance and easy mode and hardcore, but you also have the possibility that if you have fought an enemy and you kill, like, say, five of them, every animal level up. So now they are harder to kill and they take more hits, and they also evolve themselves. So now they, instead of just moving back and forward, they can now jump. Or instead of, like, doing just jumping, they now have a spike as well.
That's
that
interesting.
They stand up to you. Yeah.
Huh.
And then if you get hit, then they de-evolve again. So
Every individual enemy type is balancing its difficulty in real time, sort
yes.
of.
Yes. So ooh. Even when you come back to the really easy place, if you kill enough of them, the easy place also turns out to be harder, just because you kill them so easily. But one thing they do that I really wish a lot of other of these kinds of game did was that when you wander into a place where you are not leveled up or you do not have the tools that you technically need for doing it yet, your phone calls and one of the other characters tells you that they do not think it might be the smartest thing to do to wander into this area. But they still give you the possibility to do it. It just tells you, but if you want to follow our direction, you should go here. And I feel like I absolutely love that as cognitive accessibility, because it doesn't stop you from going to new areas. It doesn't prevent you from doing a typical hardcore challenge of Hollow Knight kind of deal, where you go to the hardest place at one the first time. But it tells you that you might go another place. And I feel like this game is sort of like baby's first Hollow Knight. Like, it's a baby's first platformer because it is such... It's made for children. But it is balanced in such a wonderful way. And the fact that they just, like, let you know when you go into an area that is too hardcore for you in the way, like, of game progression, but it still let you, I found that to be such a smart... design, accessibility design in a game like this that I have not seen before. And I really, really wanted to shout that out because I think it is important to have these things, to see that we can do these games that are supposed to be hard to do more malleable and make sure that new people come in. Because a lot of times, especially when Silksong came out, which was a notoriously hard game, a lot of people struggled because they went to the wrong places. So they didn't understand where they were supposed to go next. And then they were almost like soft locked behind something because they couldn't get themselves out. And here you sort of get warning of, I don't think you should be here yet, but you can, of course. I ended up more than once going to places I wasn't supposed to be just for fun. But at least they warn you before you do it. And I think that was really, really cool.
Nice. So in terms of stuff I've been playing, where do I even start? So I played through a really interesting little game that the internet has had a lot of opinions about this last couple of weeks. I played through a game called Mixtape.
Yes.
And I love this game. I think it's delightful. It's not without its problems, but Mixtape is basically 3 hours long, and it is a game about exploring... late 90s childhood as a teenager, exploring, like, the last day that you and your childhood group of friends are together, where whether you know it or not, you sort of have this sense of, like, this is the last time that this friend group that right now feels like it's my whole world, and, like, I can't imagine ever having friends like this again, trying to capture every last bit of emotion that is going to encompass, both for good and for bad. It is this really interesting exploration of, like, not only I want to hold on to the positive things, because this is going to be the last chance I get to experience them, but also some of the things that, like, you're not going to get another chance to say certain things, and whether you should or shouldn't, you're a teenager, you make stupid decisions. Maybe admitting to some things you shouldn't admit to, and, like, the complicated feelings that, like, teenage friendships go through. And the way that it is played, it is largely a game about watch a bunch of cutscenes happen, walk around a room to find things to interact with that will lead to more cutscenes, And interactive scenes that are... There is interactivity that you can influence, but also it's basically never going to be a barrier to you progressing.
Yeah.
And I think that's super okay. The people who I have seen suggest that this game has no gameplay, or that there's no reason to call it a game, or that it's not interactive at all, are definitely exaggerating.
Yeah.
Like, I want to give one example from this game that I think, like, should put your head in the right space for what to expect from interaction in this game. Years ago, I played a really beautiful game called Before Your Eyes. And the gimmick with that game is that you're supposed to play it with, like, a webcam or a VR headset that can see your eyes. And anytime you blink, you might jump forward in that person's life. And you're trying to, like, not blink during really intense experiences in case the scene's suddenly gone and you've jumped forward in life. Mixtape has a moment toward the end of it that really reminded me of Before Your Eyes, where it asks you to hold a button to simulate doing something, and then it tells you not to let go, and you suddenly realize, like, oh, when I let go of this button, this moment is going to end.
Yeah.
And I know this moment can't last forever, and I'm going to have to let go, but I'm still going to be complicit in, like, the thing that will end this moment is me letting go of it. Like, that's the kind of thing that 100% that narrative is better because it has that interaction in there. Even if, you know, there's a lot of points in this game where it's like, yeah, you're skateboarding down a road, and if you don't touch the controls, you might occasionally hit something, rewind a few seconds, maybe you dodge it this time or whatever. There's some portions of this game you can maybe take your hands off, but why would you when you could instead be using the controls to, like, do some cool kickflips and be, like, having fun skateboarding with your friends and, like, being an interactive part of this narrative experience, right?
And I think, like, people who say that have, like, a really narrow view of what game is, because...
Oh, yeah.
I think, like, those people might also be the same people who do not agree with the fact that gaming are an art form. And, like, games should have this possibility of being... And even if it is an interactive story, that is still a game. Like,
yeah.
It is so many different ways. And I think it's fun that people in this day and age, when critiques are so high towards devs, are still daring to do unpopular things just because that is what they want to do. They want to do this because this is what the story they wanted to tell.
I love very hard video games sometimes, but I also sometimes love a video game where it's just, look, this is about a feeling and a vibe and a time of place, and the music you're listening to when you're like 15 that's like, I've never felt stronger emotions than when my friend said they were staying home today because they were ill, rather than hang out with me. And then I went out and then I saw they were hanging out with someone else and I didn't confront them about it, but I did put on a really sad song in my headphones and imagine myself in black and white floating through the city, knocking things over and not even caring. Sometimes video games are that, and I love that they can be that.
Yeah.
Mixtape, mechanically very completable, and the places where it is interactive it's way better for that.
It's fun as well, because I have a game on my list this week as well that is sort of the same vibe of a game, sort of.
Yeah?
And that is, I played a game that calls Retro Rewind.
Oh, yes.
It's a 1990s video store owner, and that's what you do. You rent out movies. And people call in and they want to ask you to hold and reserve video games. And then at the end of the day, you have a bunch of videos that has been given back to you. And then you have to sort through them and put off shelves. And one of the things with accessibility, they have done a lot of good things. Like they have, because events happen. So like Snow Festival and stuff like that, Halloween and stuff. So they have the possibility to turn off all flashing lights because there is like a meteor shower and there is fireworks. So you can turn off all that blinking light because you will normally see it through the store window. So I'm really, really glad for that. But one thing I like with these kinds of game, and that I have had the need to do lately, has to be with, you can sort out all the videos before you start the day. So the timer for the store does not start before you open the door, but you can just go like a go about your day inside the store before the timer actually starts. And then when the store technically is closed, the timer stops, but you can still do stuff. And it gives you this for sort of sense that in the middle of the day it is stressful and you have a long queue of people that need movies and want to buy movies and popcorn and snacks. But they also have a million movies you should have rewind and put on the shelf. But that is the only stressful thing. And then you can yourself just chill in the evening and the start of the day to just make everything calmly, put things together, and just have this really relaxed game style. And I have to say, I've really, really enjoyed it. It's not the biggest game, and I have to say it got a bit boring. It's the same with like the supermarket simulator and all of these simulators. It gets a bit boring after some time, but it was worth the week I played it to the grave.
Yeah, again, it seems like just a nice, cozy place to vibe with some nostalgia. Yeah.
Do you have any more games for this week? I have one more on my list.
I've got one that is less of a video game, but it's another, like, I want to talk about a game experience thing that I did in London that I think's
Ooh.
really interesting.
Yeah.
I went to an experience in London called Jury Games. And this is a sort of interactive theatre slash mystery solving thing. The idea is it's set in a world where there has been some reform to the jury and trial system in the UK, where instead of having like as long as you need to like look over the evidence and have lawyers read out the evidence and whatnot for a case before the jury decides who's guilty or innocent, it's a version of the UK where the legal system is so full of cases that they have gone to a new system where the jury gets put in a room with the evidence and some like computers to search stuff up and ability to interview the suspect, and they have 90 minutes to make a decision about what they're going to rule on the case.
Nice.
So six of us were in this room, and the basic idea of the crime, without going too much into it, is someone was arrested for allegedly setting some fires in an office building that led to someone dying. And the person who has been accused has said, "Yes, I did the arson, I set the fires. No, I am not guilty of murder or manslaughter." And you have 90 minutes to go, "Can we solve this crime and understand what happened well enough to come to a verdict? Because we're going to have to give our what we want to sentence this person to at the end of 90 minutes." And it's really interesting. You have a lot of really practical stuff to explore in this space, because it is very much a game that's being set up in front of you. You have like a couple of shelves of physical evidence that are like things that were found on the dead body, things that were taken from the suspect. There's a couple of computers that you can search up names, and it will, if you search someone's full first and last name, it will bring up a bunch of information on them. Some of the early puzzles were things like, "We have this the suspect's phone, but he won't give us the passcode to it, and we need to find out, like, we need to work out what the 4-digit passcode is to maybe get information off his phone." You've got like 20 minutes before the first interview with the suspect, so you're like scrambling to work out what you want to ask them and like what information you can work out in that first 20 minutes, etc. They do a really good job of having, they have someone in the room with you who does a really good job of helping to point you in the right direction if you're struggling with information overload, because it's a lot of information to take on board. And also to help shepherd with accessibility aspects. So that's things like, if you struggle with looking up the data on the like database computer, they can come bring you in different formats of like printed versions of that same
Smart.
data. They can, oh, there's a number on the back of the phone that we have to type in to do something. They can read that number out to you if it is too small for you to read, for example. They have someone on hand who is not going to overstep and give you clues that you don't want, but is there to be like, if you are struggling, there is someone that's a little helping hand,
Yeah.
which I thought was really cool. at the end of it, they will bring the actors in and go, okay, here's what you missed, here's what you overlooked, here's like the facts that you did or didn't find. We did great, we found everything. We were told we were unusually good at this. But one of the things that I really like about it is that while so much of it is tactile gameplay, where it is like, objectively, there are correct answers to find. There is like, did you find the evidence of X, Y, and Z? Did you work out the things that are very tangibly provable? At the end of it, we, with like 90 seconds left, got the last of the concrete information and then realized, oh, we have to make a moral judgment here.
Ooh.
We have to make a philosophical judgment about what we want to answer about how guilty or not we think this person is. And that was really interesting. I really appreciate that it was gameplay mechanics right up until the end, and then deliberately not enough time to really think about. You just got to go with your heart. Are you gonna say he's guilty of arson? Are you gonna say he's guilty of manslaughter, of murder?
Yeah.
Make your decisions. Go. Yeah, it was a very interesting experience, and I think they did a great job of having just enough support present to shepherd you if you needed accessibility support. I also really like that they ask for your email address and phone number in advance, and some of the elements involve things going to your phone, and if you've already got accessibility stuff set up on your phone, that makes those elements able to be accessible if you're already set up for that.
Smart.
And I think that's a really interesting way to incorporate accessible tech.
Smart.
Yeah, jury games. 90 minutes, it was a really interesting time.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah. Did you have any other games you wanted to talk about this week?
Yeah, quick little. So, some years ago, a Norwegian game studio called Hyper Games gave out a game called Snufkin, which is set in the Moomies Valley. And some weeks ago, the second game in the same series came out called Moomitroll. Moomitroll in English, Winter's Warmth. And I played it now, and I just want to mention that this time around, the game is a lot more accessible in some ways. So they have taken a look more at accessibility. There are a lot more accessibility to offer. One thing that I really enjoyed was the possibility to turn off snow, like turn off wind. So that if there were wind puzzles, you could just go through it. You didn't need to stress with it. But also, it was a really cute look at proper, what can we call it? Like proper design choices that just makes things accessible. Because Moomin has white fur, right? And this was set in the winter. So the story is easy. Moomin, they sleep in the winters. But this time, the Moomin wakes up and he doesn't understand because Moomin Mom and Moomin Dad is still asleep and he do not understand what's happening. And he has to solve the mystery that is happening. And the stories are a lot darker than last time. It is talking about death and grief and loneliness and having to be brave when you think you cannot handle it, and friendship and feeling of left behind. So it is a much more darker version. But since it's set in the winter, Moomin, I was afraid that Moomin would sort of like blend in too much to the background with his white fur.
Yeah. But so there wouldn't be enough contrast.
Yes. But they have given him a quite like an outline, which I think, I don't think it is an accessibility choice. I think it is a stylized choice. But it just was so deliberable that it worked so well. It is one of those design choices that just ended up being accidental accessibility as well. And I'm so glad because, well, now I don't have the biggest problem with my eyesight, but there were never a time where I felt like I couldn't see where he was. But on the other side, I have missed out the opportunity to actually make that outline harsher. So I wish we could have seen that being a lot more harsh, so we could have a setting where we like got a black outline, so sort of like a inked in outline of him, just to make it more accessible for people that have problems with that. But it is these small things they've done. I am working on a proper like review of the whole game, so take a look out for that, both in English and Norwegian. So I will go more into depth about that, but it was worth mentioning. It is such a cozy game, and especially if you have children, I highly recommend you to check this out for them, because it is such a nice way. I think Moomin and that whole concept is such a nice way of talking sometimes about a bit harder things, and to have characters that are not either or, they're not either good or either bad. They are deep characters with flawed personalities that also are wonderful. And I absolutely love that. And even as an adult, it was so worth playing it.
Oh, a slight side tangent. There's a film that recently released called The Sheep Detective.
Yes, yes.
That, for anyone who hasn't seen it, very similar in terms of it is a really funny, sweet, charming film that does a really good job of talking about subjects like death in a very approachable to children way. I think that film is going to be, it's going to be instrumental in a lot of children's understandings of death, I think.
Yeah, I haven't seen that movie yet, but it gives me massive, I can't remember what the English name, in Norwegian is Helligrisen Babe. It's about that pig, like the 90s film, which is
Charlotte's Web or Babe. I was like, it's one of those.
It's one of those, yeah.
Babe. The 90s had a few pig films.
Yes. No, it's a Babe. That way, we're calling it Lucky Pig Babe in Norwegian, like directly translated. So that one, it reminds me sort of from the trailers I've seen, it reminds me of that one. And I also remember that movie talking about like getting older for the dogs and stuff.
It is a very fun whodunit mystery that also is like, hey, I know that when death happens, like the one thing you want to do is not think about it anymore. But like, if you want to remember the people you love at their best, that kind of has to come with the pain of remembering them. And like, conversations like that. It's good when stories find ways to talk about these things with children.
It is important. It is really important.
Yeah.
Yes. Shall we go over on some news?
Yeah, we can do some news quickly. So we got some accessibility updates for some games that either are coming out soon or have just recently come out that we can talk about. Lego Batman, The Legacy of the Dark Knight, which is the new Lego Batman game that's coming out. I've heard really good things about this. Yeah. Apparently it's very good. I'm very excited to check it out. I did not realize how much accessibility stuff this game had going on with it. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff in here that, like, is really rare in AAA games broadly. I wouldn't have expected out of a Lego game. No. So, they do note that there isn't screen reader support at launch, unfortunately. They are working on that for a future patch. But they do have audio descriptions for cutscenes. So cutscene cinematics are audio described. There is a high contrast mode with presets and different customizable colors. You can gray out the background of the world. You can add high contrast outlines onto characters to make them stand out more. The game is designed not to rely on color, so that people who are colorblind should be able to play it by default. You can turn off things like camera shake, chromatic aberration, motion blur, vignettes, but the issues that cause motion sickness. Your field of view can be expanded a bit. They can make it so that the field of view doesn't dynamically change on its own, which can be a motion sickness trigger. You can have a persistent center screen dot. You can change the visibility of the HUD, the text size. Subtitles have speaker names, adjustable background opacity. You can have captions for sound effects. Icons for voiceover to show which character is speaking. You can change the dynamic range so that the loudest sounds are a bit quieter and the quietest ones are a little louder. You can have mono audio. Everything other than the map and the pause buttons can be remapped. You can swap the sticks around so that the right stick does the left stick's things and vice versa. You can turn off the adaptive triggers on PlayStation. There's aim assist with different strengths of aim assist available. Lock on for the melee combat. Buttonholes can be turned into toggles or vice versa. You can set your gadgets to rapid fire so that, like, you press it once and it, like, does turbo button rather than having to keep tapping it. You can turn buttonholes into short taps. Quick time events can't be failed, but you can set them to automatically complete. You can have just slightly simpler quick time events if you don't want to turn them off completely. It's a really good list of, like, stuff I don't normally expect, and it's all in a Lego game.
I talked to my older sister. She has quite severe ADHD, and she absolutely loves Lego games. And the reason why she loves them is because you do not get punished when you die. You just boop up to some bricks, and then you get turned back together to the character. And when she is really having struggle with a lot of the things ADHD can make you struggle with, and she has need to sort of center herself, playing Lego games for her has been the perfect way of, like, doing enough to make her brain entertained so she doesn't wander in her thoughts and other problems, but not being so much that it's frustrated to the degree of, like, adding other ADHD problems on top. So yeah, highly recommend if you have some non-typical problems like autism, ADHD, to give Lego games a try, because they are quite, I found to be, like, the correct sensory load. Highly recommend checking them out.
Yeah. This is one that I want to download. I want to check this one out. Directive 8020, yes, which is the next game in the Dark Pictures anthology, which is those choose your own adventure type game, horror games from the Until Dawn studio. This is their new one. It's a sci-fi story set in space. It has a bunch of the stuff we've seen in their other games and a couple of new things. You can set quick time events to always be the same button that you need to press so that you always know, like, oh, a quick time event came up, I know what I need to press. Button mashing can be set to holds to avoid repeated button presses. You can disable the timer on quick time events so you've got more or infinite time to press the right button. There is simplified UI fonts so that you can get, like, clearer sans serif fonts to read. There is a bunch of options for things like customizing your difficulty for different categories. So you can do things like quick time event difficulty. Do you want to be warned in advance when quick time events are coming? Adjust the speed that your parry recharges so that you can do that more frequently. One of my favorite things they have is if you make a mistake, like you fail a quick time event, you make the wrong choice, a character dies or something, you can play it on a mode called Explorer, where you can just go back to before you made that mistake or that choice and just keep playing it with different things happening. So you don't have to, like, replay the whole section or replay the whole game to get to that point. You can just be like, oh no, that didn't go how I wanted it to go. Just rewind the tape for me. Let me try it again.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all really nice, really cool stuff.
Yep. And then we have some news from Ubisoft?
Yeah. So we can talk about Assassin's Creed Black Flag Resynced, which is coming out later this year, and this is a remake of a game from, gosh, I forget how many years ago.
Oh, God. That is many, many years ago. Holy hell. I remember playing it on one of our old cabins.
Oh, God. If you had to guess what year it came out.
2008?
2013, not as bad as you thought.
Oh, not as bad, not as bad.
Only 13 years ago. But we know that Ubisoft, like, has done really good stuff for accessibility in the years since then, in the last 13 years.
Yeah.
And they've added a bunch of it back into this new game, which is really cool.
Yes. They have more onboarding now, more focus on that.
Yep. Yeah, you've got, like, the first time boot up, it gives you an accessibility menu to set stuff up quickly.
Yes, they have difficulty settings, which I always appreciate. They have now added easier ways to find your way, so a new Pathfinder system.
This is That's great. Yeah. Please, games, allow mini-maps to be constantly visible so that I don't have to remember a map I saw a minute ago but I'm not looking at right now.
And especially for, like, Black Flag, because I remember being lost at sea so many times at that game. Mostly because I started making sea shanties and then I forgot what I was doing and then, I'm not supposed to be here. But
well,
I think...
great news! You can now set a path and the boat will automatically follow it. Yes, it will just autopilot for you.
Then I can just sea shanty as much as I just want.
Yeah. A lot of the stuff in here is the Ubisoft stuff we expect at this point. Really big text sizes, speaker direction indicators, emotion tags are coming back, so the little, like, one-word emotion descriptions at the start of subtitles, those are coming back. I'm really glad Ubisoft is making that, like, a standard across their games, it seems. Being able to change all of, like, really, really dial into a lot of the sound changes, screen reader support, I believe they have audio description of cutscenes again, lots and lots of customization stuff on the controls. Basically, the Ubisoft set of accessibility things.
Yes.
Which, that's great news. Anytime... Ubisoft is a company that's gotten so good at accessibility that anytime they go back to one of their older games and add more accessibility in, it's going to make a world of difference. Like, it is a very significant kind of improvement that's going to make.
And I also hope, because, like, in the accessibility community... Ubisoft is a hero, but in the more general gaming population, Ubisoft isn't always as favorable. And Black Flag are one of their most popular Assassin's Creed games, and I hope this remake maybe will show people a bit more that, like, Ubisoft does a lot of cool things as well. So being a bit in a good favor of people, I hope, for their own sake.
Yeah. And then I think maybe the last one that's important to talk about this week is that there was an update to Blueprints recently that added in a bunch of cool accessibility stuff that I think is worth talking about. So you can now change a bunch of settings to help with motion sickness comfort, which is really good because it's a first-person 3D game, and that's... You can do things like changing the mouse sensitivity, the FOV. You can make looking around be more smooth. Anytime you're going upstairs, and particularly like winding stairs, you can now just skip the stairs. You just teleport past them. There's options for changing like your reticle size and stuff like that. Really important. They've done a bunch of settings to help with color blindness.
Yeah, this one is the one I really enjoy. I'm so glad for this one.
So there's so many color-related puzzles in this game. You can either change the colors of things in the world, or you can add shapes to the colors to help you differentiate them.
Yeah.
Both of which are really, like, in combination, that's a great pair of ways to make it clear what colors are which.
Yeah, or you can have just, like, labels. So it just points to, this is yellow. Point to yellow, this is white, points to white. And I think that is smart as well, because patterns can sometimes be a bit hard as well, especially if the items are small. So I like that they understand that color filters, not a good solution. Two other solutions. Ah, yes. Muy bueno.
Well, let's just give you lots of different options to help you find one that works.
Yeah.
That game is great, and I'm glad that more people are going to be able to play it comfortably.
Yeah. Oh god, I'm tired. I'm so sorry.
Am I.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Is that a good cue for us to wrap for this week, then?
I think so. I am so... That is so unprofessional, just yawning the biggest
Oh, no, no, don't worry. I yawned and muted myself during it earlier. It's fine. I am also having a sleepy one. It's fine. I've got AA Showcase stuff to work on, so I'll take the early evening. Aurevia, where can people find you on the internet if they want more of the stuff that you do?
You can find me under the name Aurevia, except for TikTok, because somebody stole my name there. I am Aurevia Gaming. Lately, I have been back to streaming, and the new news is that I am back to streaming, but I will never come back to regular streaming. So I'm back to just stream whenever there is an event or something I want to showcase.
Well, that's all the more reason for people to go follow you on streaming platforms, so they get a little notification when you do it.
Yes, so we're going to do cool things like there was like Games of Norway this week, which showcased Norwegian games on Steam, so I was also showcased on Steam, which was really, really cool. And then Megapop's Life Below comes out in 2 weeks, so then I will be streaming that. And things like that. So I'm really looking forward. It is a lot of fun thing. And also, some might have seen this, but I also want to talk about it. I am now officially a Save the Children ambassador. So I am an official, the first part of like Save the Children stream team in Norway. Together with a gang of gamers called Level Up and two other streamers called Protexit and Smelia. And we are going to help Save the Children to showcase their work and raise money. And we even, which is so cool, but there's like a sort of an app like that in Norway or in Scandinavia, we could pay each other. So sort of like if I owe you some money, I could just send you by that app. And we have gotten our own like stream number on that app. So every time somebody gives money to Save the Children and it is by our channels, they actually like Save the Children will actually see it came from us gamers. So when I came back and my community starting like, I because I have told people that I don't want people to just subscribe, like I've taken away all monetary stuff on my Twitch since I'm not going to do it regularly, and said like you could instead just we give it to the children instead, they are in the next generation, they're our future. And seeing them people donating, it was amazing to see. And I got so happy. And I even got like a notification from the team going like, oh, I see your community has started giving. Thank you. Thank you so much. So I'm really, really happy. Aww. Yeah. Laura, where can I find you?
You can find me at Laura K Buzz pretty much everywhere on the internet. Patreon, that's the one that pays the bills as little as a dollar a month. Means I can keep doing all the stuff that I do. The one to look out for is on Friday, the 5th of June at 4 PM UK, 11 AM Eastern, 8 AM Pacific. We're going to be doing the Access Ability Summer Showcase again. This is where you can see, I believe this year, the basic version of the showcase is 52 minutes. So 52 minutes worth of trailers for accessible video games. They're very cool video games you should want to check out anyway, but also the trailers are all going to tell you about, like, what accessibility stuff those games have going on. So you'll know confidently, hey, does this game have the settings I'm going to need to be able to play it? We got some really cool, really interesting games this year. We got some wonderful segments from disabled creators talking about stuff. That's going to be on June 5th. I'm going to be kind of quiet until then because it's the three weeks in which I have to make the showcase happen.
Yeah.
But look forward to that. June 5th. Go check out the Accessibility Summer Showcase on YouTube or Twitch at Laura K Buzz. And also probably you could probably watch the stream on Steam, I believe, again this year.
Yeah.
If that's a place you want to watch it. Thank you very much everyone for watching. We will have another episode for you again soon. Bye.
Bye.